Thanks for joining us for another edition of College Crosscast, and on this episode we'll be tackling the women's tournament. I'm Ryan McDonald.
I'm Skylar Gilbert.
And I'm Jake Nazar.
And thank you for joining us on this women's lacrosse tournament update edition of College Crosscast. And thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the mainline crosscast last night. The gang had a good one without me. I've started to listen to it. Some really good stuff there, Jake and the rest of you, the guys.
Yeah, it was fun. But I'm glad this one's not going to go 2.5 hours, too.
I don't need that much back-to-back.
But thank you, Skylar and Jake, for joining along. And as we said, we're going to give the women's tournament a little bit of an inside view. We covered the men last night, and tonight we'll do the women all before the Caps play as we're recording this. So you two are very vested in that. They might go up 3-0.
I'm a little bit relieved right now. Like, it's weird. The situation we're kind of finding ourselves in right now, where usually a Caps game is the most stressful time of year. We're playing the Rangers, we're playing the Penguin, and we're out of that, the circus, as they call it. But, yeah, I see Jake keeps calling it the circuit, but we're out of that now. It is the circus when you play the Penguin. Now we're playing a normal series, and, you know, Ovechkin's taking charge. Lars Eller on the second line, he's been unbelievable in the absence of Backstrom, and looking forward to it, yeah.
Yeah, it's I've been very calm, like the entire playoffs really has been for me, you know, with the exception of the Penguins. Like, I told myself I wasn't really going to get like crazy invested about the Penguins series, and then because it's Cavs Penguins, you just get very invested anyway.
Yeah.
But this one's been, you know, more of a relief, and I guess it obviously helps that they won the first two on the road.
And even
the last 2 years, I didn't have any expectations this year. And that's
this was a
big thing, because winning the President's Trophy is spotlight's always on you, and you know, it was just different.
Yeah, and after like last year, it was like, I don't know, it really couldn't get much worse. So it was like,
yeah, I agree with that.
You know, I think it could. We've had the worst of it, so let's see what happens. I think the team like probably has that same mentality.
And all
it feels like
and. Although there's no more Caps Rangers in the playoffs. Don't worry, Jake, you do still have Maryland Cornell.
That's great. At least there's no Rob Pinnell this time.
No, you just have Jeff Teague.
That's fair.
Alrighty, but on this edition, we'll talk about the women's NCAA tournament, which had an exciting first weekend of action, and some intriguing quarterfinal matchups along the way. A Maryland battle, a Final Four matchup that should have been a Final Four matchup, but because the NCAA's screwed both teams over in the seedings. Two non-traditional lacrosse, well, James Madison actually has a couple titles from back in the day, plus Florida, so SEC and James Madison, two schools with brand names that don't have men's lacrosse, and then the return of some of the old powers as well in the fourth matchup. We'll get to those after we
week. I think four of these quarterfinal teams don't have a men's program. It's just women's lacrosse. BC, Florida, JMU, and Northwestern.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot more teams on the women's side. There's like 115 because of Title IX. They have to, you know, balance the football programs at a lot of these big schools. So
what we're saying is,
I don't know what I'm.
Bama women's lacrosse, roll tide, Paul. Coming soon.
So, I mean, they are, even though they're not, you know, women's or they're not men's programs. These are it's.
Last oh, they year's are powerhouses.
Yeah, like I mean, James Madison hasn't been to
back in the day.
Final Four in a while, but Florida went to one, and they've been in the quarterfinals pretty perennially this decade, and then Northwestern's obviously Northwestern.
Yeah,
and
dynasty going.
All the, I believe, all the Final Four teams, except wasn't Penn State there last year?
Yes, Penn State was there last
year. Yeah, but Maryland, Navy, and BC are all back. I guess BC's, you know, more a newcomer, and Stony Brook's, I guess, kind of like a floater in between.
I mean, Stony Brook's been on the cusp of the Final Four. They just haven't broken through yet. But yeah, they've been
they're exactly like Albany in terms of like storylines.
Exactly. Yeah, same
and
time.
I was going to bring that up later.
But we will. Yeah, we will later. Yeah. Well, first.
Yeah, and then North Carolina also, you know, national championship and all that.
So let's start off with Friday's first round action. The couple seeded teams were in action, as well as mostly of the unseeded teams were in action. We'll start at the game that Jake was at. Towson 16, Wagner 6. That's right, Wagner makes the tournament in women's lacrosse. But the Tigers dominate that one. Jake, you want to share your experience a little bit?
Oh, it was fun. It was very hot. Very, very hot, which made it a little unpleasant. But overall, it was fun. I definitely noticed, I told Ryan this, in terms of, like, you know, if you want to get the crowd into it, I think, like, the shot clock really helps kind of, like, energize the crowd, like, when there's transition, because, you know, there's a real emphasis that you can't just, like, screw around and take, you know, 25 seconds to try to get in the box. You got to, you know, really kind of push it forward, and, you know, there's an emphasis on that. Towson wasn't, like, really a transition team from, like, what I noticed. You know, they're more of a methodical, you know, possession-by-possession kind of deal, but it did... I definitely felt like, you know, the rule changes and the shot clock, you know, really enhanced, like, the live experience in terms of, you know, getting the crowd into it and making it more enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, before they instituted that 2 years ago, and before that, that was everyone's gripe against women's lacrosse. There was no measure against stalling whatsoever in the entire sport. So, one of the first NCAA games I ever covered was Stony Brook against Princeton back in 2015. And Princeton went ahead and at halftime, I think they were winning like 6-4. It was a low scoring game. And every time they had the ball, they would just sit on it for 5-6 minutes. It was the worst thing imaginable to watch. Then they finally put the shot clock in, and it's just enhanced the viewership, the appeal to the game so much, and it's a much easier game to watch now because teams are forced to move the ball and take shots, so you can't sit on a lead so easily.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the Syracuse Northwestern National title game in 2012. Almost got thrown out of that game for how I was at that. Thank God I knew one of the security guards because I knew him from high school. And then the girls that were by me tattled on me to their mom, and I'm like, oh.
I feel like the breaking point was the is it Maryland versus, was it Maryland Cuse?
I think that was, yeah, that also was
2015?
Syracuse getting stalled out.
2015? Yep. Well, I mean,
2014.
They got stalled out at the end. It was like 2015, and Maryland was up like 3 or 4 and held the ball for like the last 6 minutes of the game.
It just started getting so bad. They had to make this real
the two most the two most prominent instances of it happened in national title games where Syracuse lost. So all the Syracuse.com people switched from Fire Desco to abolish stalling in the one women's lacrosse game they watch a year.
And in the men's too. The most notable one since they got the
Was Syracuse Maryland.
It was
in
Syracuse Maryland. I think it was Maryland UNC. I think was the one. 2015. I think that was the one. Syracuse. I think they like just got straight up beat. Though Maryland plays well, but like I think the Maryland UNC one was the one where they like Maryland held the ball for like the last 6 minutes of the game. People were like, this is abominable. And to be fair, they were kind of right.
If you want pace of play changes, make sure Syracuse is involved in it. Well, granted, Gary Gate is also one of the biggest proponents of the sped up rules and everything, so worked hand in hand. But yeah, so Towson wins that one 16-6. Virginia Tech beat Georgetown 13-10.
Georgetown's trying to have made the tournament. That was like they had their RPI bolstered from non conference wins. They played Maryland, they lost by like 12, but it just they got in because of RPI. They shouldn't have made it. USC was better. I think even UMass was probably better. Just anyway, Go ahead.
By the way, if you, one side effect of the rule changes is notice all the high scoring games as we go along. Like this one, Colorado 23, Duval 18. So the Buffaloes beat Jacksonville 23-18 in an entertaining one. They bought into the speed lacrosse method even more than the men did with when Casey Powell was in town.
The Jacksonville game and the Atlantic Sun final last week, or 2 weeks ago now, what, I think it was 26-19.
25-19.
Carolina.
Yeah, 25-19.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's Jacksonville's MO. They just go up and down the field as fast as they can. They play in a garbage conference, so they get into the tournament every year.
Yeah, I mean, like,
and
with all due respect to these two programs, 24-3 and 23-1 over Howard and Delaware State.
Yeah, I know.
By the way,
they definitely a high-powered offense.
By the way, just apologies in advance if you hear any rumbling of thunder. There's a line of storms hitting both Skylar and I here on the island during the podcast.
And me.
And Jake, too, down in Maryland. So no birds, but maybe some thunder.
Yeah.
Also in the state of Colorado, Denver beats High Point 19-10. Actually, these weren't played in Colorado, but Colorado teams. But the Pios win that one over the Panthers. In the most entertaining game of the first round, one of two very entertaining games of the first round. This one I'm biased towards. So let's get the music, though, because of the result, if I could find it. One second. Why can't I find Ride of the Valkyries? There we go. So, Princeton got out to a huge lead over Syracuse. And then Syracuse made a big comeback. And actually took the lead in the second half, but then Princeton tied it up. And after a couple chances to score, the Orange leave Chestnut Hill with the loss. And Princeton wins it in double OT. 12-11. So as if Princeton didn't have enough transitive property ways to claim a victory over the men, the women get their revenge for a regular season loss with the win in the first round.
What do you think of that? Why do they schedule rematches so often in the first round or second round and in lacrosse? Like they don't even hesitate. I know they do it geographically, but, like, Syracuse playing Princeton again, I thought it was weird.
Yeah, you could have sent Princeton to Stony Brook. You could have sent Syracuse to Stony Brook. I don't know.
I mean, you could have discouraged rematches a little bit, but... Yeah, it was a big-time win for Princeton there. I mean, they lost 2 days later, but Syracuse was just kind of a team... They were really hot to start the year, and then went. They were dreadful in ACC play. The women were. I think they finished seventh in the ACC. They got in because they had a couple strong wins. They beat Florida regular season.
They beat Florida and Princeton, and then they're in the tournament based on those two alone.
Yep. Beat Loyola too.
Yeah, Loyola. Yeah, that's another big one. Well. And but Princeton was red hot, having just won the Ivy and. And it was a coin flip game, and Princeton got it done in OT.
My lifelong Princeton women's lacrosse fan side was happy. My lifelong Syracuse alum side was not so happy. But very good game there. Loyola beats Fairfield 18-2. Speaking of Loyola, so Greyhounds ran away with that one. Then in the game, Skylar covered at Stony Brook.
That was a doozy. That was a good one.
Yeah, Penn 15, Penn State 14. So in a Keystone State battle, except on Long Island, the Quakers. That one was in overtime too, right?
Double OT.
Was it?
Yeah, double overtime. Yep.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So another double overtime one.
Inside the cross as usual. Screw them here.
And thus, Penn knocks out one of the teams that made the Final Four last year.
They did. Yeah, Penn looked really good in that game. Zoe Bellido, a freshman for Penn, she's going to be a star in a few years. She's a lefty. I think of her as a feeder because she's on the ball a lot, but she actually had more goals than assists this year, so maybe not. But reminds me remotely of Kylie O'Miller, but that's a lofty bar to butter at, but she's definitely a talented player.
Okay, then Northwestern making their first announcement to the rest of the women's lacrosse world that they're back and still for real. They beat Richmond 24-18. Once again, 24-18. If you thought Colorado Jacksonville had offense, then Northwestern Richmond had some more for you. Virginia with an upset victory over Stanford by a score of 12-3. So a pretty lofty upset, to say the least. But the Hoos took care of business in that one. And then Navy beats Johns Hopkins 16-9.
Yeah, I was, reading that was a bit of a... I think Hopkins, did they host that game? Or were they, like, the higher
team? No, it was actually hosted by Loyola. It was right down Charles Street, but...
Yeah, no, I think there was some thought about, like... Because Navy, I believe, beat Hopkins...
No. Beat Loyola for the Patriot.
Navy beat Loyola for the Patriot. Oh, I saw there was some contention about Navy having to play Hopkins because Navy was a more impressive team. You know, they were like...
Navy probably should have been the 8 seed.
Yeah, that was what it was, that they...
Because they had the head-to-head over Loyola, but then they beat Loyola anyway in the second round, so...
Yeah. The NCAA, everybody! And,
That was a point of contention that Navy was maybe underseeded or, especially because they'd come in on like a 7-game win streak.
So on Sunday's second round.
Really, really weak schedule this year, though. I will say that. I mean, they're a terrific team, and the Collins sisters are fantastic. Larkin is one of the best attackers in the country, but they played a really weak schedule, so that's probably why they didn't get the credit they deserve.
And when they did meet in the second round on Sunday, Navy ended up beating Loyola 19-15 in a Patriot League Maryland matchup. So one of the seeded teams out with that one.
Navy also has a girl on their team named Andy O'Sullivan. And I'm only remembering this because Ryan said something borderline like insulting about her last year. And I just remember making fun of him for it.
What did I do again?
You said something about her name or something. I just remember grilling you for it on like the pod last year when you were watching the women's Final Four. So it just popped into my head since I never lose a chance to make fun of Ryan.
Number one seeded Maryland took care of business right off the bat, 15-4 victory over Denver. If that was a men's score, Jake would be
that game was rolling not everywhere. They pulled away in the second half at that one. At halftime, it was only 4-2. So Denver kept the offense down for a bit. But then Megan Whittle just took complete control in the second half. So it was a blowout.
Oh, my God. 4-2 at the half. That makes Jake make that wish I was even more of a men's
beautiful
game. If it was Maryland, 4-2 is
right down my alley.
No. But I'm saying if it was the men, you'd be complaining about that. It's such a typical Bill Tierney game. And then they blow him out in the end. You'd be completely hysterically laughing.
That would be great stuff. Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about this, on, like, the men's side. People were just, like, kind of, like, just pure goal scorers. And Whittle, 74 goals to only 12 assists. She's, just a textbook definition of a finisher who not to say she doesn't do anything else, but she's, just a pure... She's in there to put the ball in the net, and she does it about as well as anyone.
What I will say about Whittle, and she's up to 80 goals because she had 6 more this weekend. Of those 80 goals, 75 are unassisted. So that's just a testament to how she does it off the step herself.
Yeah.
These ISO drives. And pure goal scorer. She's number 2 all time in goal scored now.
And I mean, one of the few seniors on Maryland's attack. Not their, I mean, like Steele and Giles are both experienced too.
It's a young Terps.
It's her and and Hench, and those are the only two real seniors on the offensive side.
Steele is a junior, isn't she?
Yeah, Steele's a junior. Giles is also a junior, so there is some experience there.
All right, if you like the...
Sure, it's a sophomore. Anyway, go ahead.
Yep. If you like laughing at ACC misfortune like the rest of the crew does on the men's side, then you'll like this one. Number 3, James Madison, 15, Virginia, 12. So the Dukes, as the number 3 seed, will make it over to the quarterfinals. That is the first time. When's the last time James Madison made it to the quarterfinals? I think it's been a while, even though they do have the historical pedigree as a national champ.
Quarterfinals for James Madison was, I'm going to go look at this now. Last time was 2010.
So it's been a little bit.
Been a bit, yeah.
2010. They've been the tournament the last 2 years, but lost in, last 3 years lost round 1, and then second round, so.
Yeah, the CAA on the women's side is in into a two-bit lead. Towson and JMU have both kind of built their programs up.
I think I was getting James Madison confused with New Hampshire in terms of historical pedigree, but JMU was good in the past too, though, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
That's always my favorite trivia in the America East, because New Hampshire's America East school, and I'm like, what's the? I asked my friend, what's the only America East lacrosse program that's won a national championship? And New Hampshire women, I mean, they weren't in that conference back then. It hadn't been formed yet, but they won like 84.
Yeah, JMU was made a lot of quarterfinals back in like the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like quarterfinal, made one Final Four in 2000. Then they kind of slid off a bit, but they've, you know, had a great, this senior class has been big for them. Won like, I think 57 games.
Mm.
Yeah.
Down in Gainesville, Florida beats Colorado 13-9. That would be a boring college football bowl game, but the Gators get themselves back into the quarterfinals with that victory there.
Colorado started that game up 5-0, which is alarming to all of us keeping track in the Stony Brook booth. But then Gators came back and won it kind of easily in the end.
Then, as we said before about Northwestern making their grand return, don't call a comeback. They've been here for years. Northwestern 21, Towson 17. So the Wildcats get themselves back into the quarterfinal land that they've been in for so many years, even as an unseeded team this go-around.
Yeah, and in that game, Selena Lasota and Sheila Nezelbush for Northwestern, both of them had 8 goals in that second-round game. And both of them had 8 goals. So that's 16 goals between 2 players. Kind of unbelievable, but they've been playing really fast-paced lacrosse this weekend, and you can see that in their scores against both Richmond and Towson.
Yeah, goalie play for Towson was a bit of a issue all season, or maybe a bit of a weakness, and Kylie Keating in this game only had 3 saves out of 23 shots, so I mean, that's really... In Northwestern, Julie Krupnik wasn't great, but she made 9, and so you get 6 more saves in a 4-goal game. There's your difference.
Then in the game... Skylar covered as well. Stony Brook 18, Penn 5. The Seawolf machine rolls on in that one.
Yeah, I mean... The score makes it look closer than it actually was. I mean, they went up 18-2 in that game before they pulled the starters out. It was just a clinic at both ends. I'm looking forward to this week when they get a real test against Boston College.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. When we preview the quarterfinals, we'll touch on that. But number 5 seeded Stony Brook rolls on there. Number 2 seeded UNC beats ACC rival Virginia Tech 17-8. So the Tar Heels also don't have any cobwebs in their opening performance in the NCAA tournament. And nor did conference mate Boston College, as they take down Princeton 16-10. The Golden Eagles return to their second straight quarterfinal with the victory there.
Yeah. Carolina's been a quarterfinal team now 14 years in a row, which is pretty darn impressive.
It's absurd, yeah.
Pretty darn impressive. I think that's even better than Maryland's mark. It might be. I mean, it's better than Northwestern, you know, for reference.
Mm-hmm.
It might be better than Maryland's as well.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
By like a season. Yeah. So they've.
Back to the Tar Heels.
14 years in a row in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, UNC and Maryland have obviously been the two stalwarts of the sport, even during Northwestern's dynasty in the 2000s. And they're both showing up in this one. They're both the top two seeds, and they're looking like primed for another Final Four run. And they took their first steps on Sunday. So before we get to this upcoming weekend's games, the Tuorton finalists were named for the women as well last week. Couple return finalists from last year, too. One junior, four seniors, and they are as follows. We have Sam Apuzzo from BC, the only junior on the list, but she's on it. Kristen Gaudian from JMU. Marie McCool from UNC from last year's list, as well as Kylie Allmiller.
Allmiller.
I can't believe I'm botching the best player in women's lacrosse's last name, but here I am. So Allmiller is back on the list, and Megan Whittle from Maryland as well. So we got a good list here. By the way, if you're a fan of paperwork, like the RMU host kerfuffle, James Madison did not submit paperwork for All-American lists. Only the sport of lacrosse.
So Kristen Gaudian, who would have been a surefire All-American, she won't be able to get that honor this year because of a clerical error on the part of James Madison. But she might get. She won't get the coach's selection. It's just kind of a shame. Just do your paperwork, guys.
I'm glad to see that the Tuorton with the women also is incredibly senior heavy. Not that the four aren't all incredible players, obviously, but, you know, this is the tour time you know, are allergic to nominating anyone who's ever an underclassman.
Yeah, yep. Jeff T. or T.D. Erlin. Yeah, I know.
Or Pat Spencer back as a freshman.
Or, I don't know, Kelly Larkin, who had 50 points.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this year. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even... I get why, like, Taryn Allmiller, considering she plays, you know, with Kylie, you're probably not going to put, you know, two players on the same team, but...
Or Courtney Murphy.
Murphy's a senior. I mean, she probably should have been, but...
You know, that's the gripe I'm hearing around here. Everyone wanted Murphy to be up there, but I kind of understand you don't want to put two players on the same team because... You know, if one's constantly assisting the other one's goals, then it's going to inflate both their point totals a little bit. And, but, you know, I probably would have put Murphy over Gaudian, but again, I'm biased.
So if we have.
They all look. Again, Larkin being left off at 115 points, especially 61 and 54, is, you know.
That's, and they won their conference. It wasn't a bad team. It was a very good Navy team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, that feels like a case of, you know, I mean, Gaudian's got great numbers. 67 goals is incredibly impressive. But if you're going to put, like, Whittle on there as well in terms of just, you know, women who kind of just score, it feels like, I don't know, you'd choose, like, the better one instead of including both.
Yeah.
And Whittle's got, you know, the better numbers. I mean, just looking at Larkin seems to me like the one who...
It's been midfielder heavy in the past, But this year, there's only one midfielder. It's Marie McCool out of North Carolina, and she's an all-around player. I mean, out of the five players, she's the only one that plays two ways. She plays defense, too, and she takes draws. And she's kind of cut out of that mold that Taylor Cummings was for so many years at Maryland, where, you know, she's not leading the country in points, per se, but she's doing everything on the field. She's mm-hmm. taking the draws. She's getting the ground ball, you know.
I mean, that's the...
That's why McCool's in there.
It'll be... I mean, that was the thing with, you know, Zoe Stukenberg last year. You know, which was like a similar case, and that got everyone peed off. Terms of, and I don't think McCool will. I mean, maybe if Carolina wins the national championship, she might get it. But I mean, Stukenberg's numbers, points numbers were better, and you know. So.
And do you think and do you think the backlash from last year? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, the backlash.
I feel like Allie has to win. If
no, yeah, I'd give it to her this year.
I feel like, I mean, she's going to go over 500 career points this weekend. Before this year, no one had ever gone over 400. Her numbers are, they're ridiculous.
Yeah,
I know she probably should have won it last year. I wasn't as, like, bothered, but I mean, I'm a Maryland fan, so, you know, that goes into it too, but I mean... I wasn't totally bothered by it because, again, Stukenberg is, you know, an all-around player. But this year, I don't think there's
–
the points numbers are so insane. Again, it's just hard to ignore.
Yeah, Kylie's numbers are just – she's just on a different level in terms of goal scoring from everybody else. And in addition to that, even if you're treating it like a lifetime achievement award like the Tuareg can sometimes be, it's still justified because she put up amazing numbers her senior year.
Yeah. I mean, she's – she had 160.
She's on the number one team in the polls, too.
She had 164 last year, and she, based on what she does, I mean, if they win this and get to the Final Four, she'll probably, she'll probably put up like 19 points, you know? I mean, maybe it's harder competition, so maybe someone will pull her to, you know, a 6 or 7 point output, but like, would you be shocked? Would you be shocked if she dropped like 20 over the next two games and got to surpass last year? No.
I mean, if she has three more games, if they make the title game.
She has three games, definitely going to get to 20.
Yeah, she'll get to pass last year's.
Yeah, if she gets to the Final Four, a conservative measure would be 10 to 20. Not 10 to 15.
The other thing to look at is Courtney Murphy is only 7 away from the goal record again, which was 100 goals 2 years ago. And she's at 93 right now. So both Ole Miller and Murphy might break their own records again.
So I'm guessing the stats page isn't. How many did Ole Miller have on? How many points did she have on Saturday or Sunday?
And she has 152 total.
Okay, I've got previous information. She had 146 before. Now she's got 152. So she needs 12 over the next. She needs 12 points to tie her mark of last year, which is 164.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're looking, I mean, her average is 7 a pop. So, I mean, get to the Final Four, you'll assume she'll probably pass that.
And I think this game this weekend, even if it should be a rainy conditions, but against BC, that'll be a high-scoring game, too.
Mm-hmm.
She'll get her chances.
Yeah, so let's move into this weekend's games. And high-scoring is probably going to be the theme of all these games. It may be, except for Maryland Navy, I could see the defense is showing up a bit in that one. But otherwise... Man, we have a lot of offensive firepower, especially that BC Stony Brook game and UNC Northwestern as well. We could be in for some real entertaining lacrosse Saturday afternoon. Now, by the way, because this is lacrosse, and it's even worse when it's the NCAA, and it's even worse when it's the NCAA dealing with a women's sport, and it's even worse when it's the NCAA dealing with a women's sport that doesn't have a national TV contract. Start times are noon, 1, 1, and 1, because everybody's allergic to Jake, Saturday night lacrosse.
Or even Saturday afternoon.
Even Saturday like evening. Or Saturday
o'clock.
Morning
evening. Or 5 o'clock. Or...
I have no idea. I mean, I'm going to see one game this week. I'll be up at BC covering that game and... You know, I'm sure Maryland Navy is going to be a fantastic game and not going to see any of it, but
I love how they just have a token Maryland Navy at 12. Like, yeah, here's one game.
Here's one game.
Not at the third time of everyone.
I mean, that one might be picked up by BTN because BTN actually knows how to cover women's lacrosse.
I assume it.
ESPN3 picked up the Stony Brook BC game.
That'll be good to watch, I guess, at halftime of the.
Yeah, last year, I remember last year when they made the great idea of let's have Stony Brook play their quarterfinal game against Maryland, top two teams in the nation last year. Let's have them play same time as the Hofstra quarterfinals so everyone on Long Island can't watch the game. Brilliant.
Yep.
That'll be me on Saturday.
It's happening again.
Yep, that'll be me on Saturday. Stony Brook, BC. Well, can't be wasting my phone battery having to stream it while I'm watching another game. So, great job.
Yeah, I'm looking here to see if there's been any. It's still Tuesday, so I guess there could be a, announcement.
I think Northwestern UNC might get an ESPN3 slot as well because it's ACC Network.
That might be ACC Network, yeah.
Much, that's the same.
Stony Brook BC is ESPN3.
/ ACC Network, yeah. Florida James Madison is going to get Dodge.
Good luck.
Yeah, you'll be able to watch it somewhere, but it might just be
the
local feed. It might be from the James Madison website even. But
yeah, there's nothing.
Maybe if we
badger Big Ten, they'll put on Merrill Navy or
Women's Lacrosse Networks. It's more. I know softball gets the ratings, but it's infinitely more entertaining.
It really is. It is.
And infinitely more entertaining than baseball. Sorry, Jake.
People don't know, but it's so much more entertaining than softball. But
someday it'll be the premier women's spring sport.
Eventually.
Sport of the future.
Sport of the future. Let's take our eyes off.
Someone said that. Like, it was some, like, I don't know, like, it's one of those New York Magazine articles, like, from a couple weeks ago, where it called, like, lacrosse is sport of the future. And it's like, buddy, it ain't 2007.
Yeah, let's take our eyes off the men's lacrosse ball. It's never going to overtake college baseball. But women's lacrosse, now that's the future. More schools playing it, more widespread, more non-hotbed areas playing it. Let's have that overtake college softball, because let's face it, college softball is eventually going to get obsolete when women's baseball gets more prominent, thank God, because women's baseball is going to be a million times better than softball. But that's the sport of the future we got to go after. Get it on TV more. That's the biggest thing with women's lacrosse is it needs to be on TV more. Like,
They were like what?
ESPNU puts a Hopkins game, a Maryland game, and a Princeton game. There's your schedule.
And Hopkins women aren't even that good. Like, they'll put the Hopkins women game on against, like, Hopkins Maryland, UMBC. I think, was on this year, right?
I know
Stony Brook was on last year.
I saw, like, three games on TV this year.
BTN at
only,
least
and only one was an ESPN. The only ESPN game I saw was Maryland UNC.
I think it was ESPNU.
Mm-hmm. I think that was ESPNU.
Yeah, I think Hopkins, as part of the deal that they have with the men's program, they air a women's game every year, too, and usually it's not a great matchup. But that's our little tangent on grow the game, put women's lacrosse on way more. It's entertaining, it's fun, and more sports. Because, I've always liked women's lacrosse. Back in high school, in addition to playing lacrosse, I also managed girls lacrosse for a year as well at my high school, in addition to supporting them and everything. But the issue is at the college level is if you're outside your school and outside of your friends' programs, it's kind of hard to follow along because, again, it's bad enough that there's not enough, in our minds, men's lacrosse games going on, and that's kind of helped with the streaming. But the women's game is even worse. When it comes to
the men's game, we got no deal.
The streaming helps, though.
I mean, streaming, yeah. Like, streaming has infinitely helped lacrosse overall.
Like there was one Stony Brook women's game that I was unable to stream this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
streaming.
I forgot which one. I think it was Stony Brook, Michigan. Michigan didn't have a stream up. Uh-huh. That was the only one of the whole schedule. So. Uh-huh.
But I mean, the streaming helps. But I mean, even with the NCAA tournament, having to play hodgepodge on what network or what streaming service to find it. Yeah, the semifinals.
I don't care what you guys. Yeah, it's gotta be uniform.
Yeah. The semifinals should be at the very least thrown on ESPN News if you don't have. I understand that the softball tournament's on three different networks. I understand that gets way bigger ratings. I understand that girls are more likely to watch softball than women's lacrosse in terms of what they want to go into.
I mean,
just
they're
because
more
of other
likely to watch softball than women's lacrosse because you show softball all the time.
Softball's, I know that's part of it too, but I'm saying I know that softball is more widespread in popularity and everything and availability and whatnot in schools.
No, look,
if
they wanted to make the effort, they could make the effort.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying though. Like at the very least, I understand it. Friday, if you have two networks of softball and the NBA on ESPN, fine. You still throw at least make the effort to throw it on ESPN News or something. The semifinals, it's kind of a disservice to have the national semifinal on a streaming service. And it's not even like, it's not like even an anti...
No, it's not ESPNU.
The semifinals
The Final Four is, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The whole nine?
I thought it was on ESPN 3.
Yeah, all three of them are on
okay,
ESPNU.
I take that.
Because last year it was only, I believe...
The championship game. And that was a minor miracle because they were... they kept on putting the... I mean, it was only a couple years ago where you had to watch it on ESPN 3, the title game.
Yeah, they put the championship game on.
Final Four is definitely on ESPNU this year.
I see on the NCAA website it's ESPN 3, ESPN 3 title game, ESPNU.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought, okay, then I'm wrong.
Okay, well,
just make the effort to throw it at least on ESPN News or something. I mean, it's a national semifinal, and you don't do this with any other sport either. It's not even like a... it's an anti-women's sport thing. No, because they put every other women's sport on the semifinals on TV, with the exception of lacrosse and hockey. Hockey, I understand Big Ten Network has the rights to that. And BTN actually does a good job. They put the whole women's Frozen Four on. But
like in the fall, they have a women's volleyball tournament. They have...
Yeah, the whole thing's on ESPN2, essentially.
The whole thing's on ESPNU, yeah.
I just make the effort and throw it on ESPN News.
I mean, what's like... Yeah, like, what are you... Or, I don't know, God forbid...
I mean, what?
Throw the 6 p.m. Sports Center on ESPN News, put a softball in ESPN, and free up one channel.
I understand if ESPNU has softball Friday night wrong. Don't get me wrong on that. But, like, ESPN News, what? It's not going to hurt you to put women's lacrosse on. You'll get another, 15,000, 20,000 viewers over whatever Sports Center re-air is on or something.
Yeah, like, what are we?
Yeah, right.
I don't really see what you're... No, I mean, it's one thing when we complain about, I don't know, that, like, some...
Why is Hopkins on every week?
It's like when we complain to, like, I don't know, like Cornell, like, why isn't Cornell Syracuse on ESPN or something? It's like, chill out, man. Just go watch the thing on the Ivy League Network, whatever. I mean, it's one thing, it's not like on Tuesday. It's, like, it's one thing to complain about that. But it's a whole other thing, in that case, you're just like, it's like, grow up. But, I mean, when you're talking about the national semifinals on ESPN 3, a sport that gets, like, what? I mean, well, I don't know what the attendance was last year. Was it, like, 10,000?
Yeah, 10,000, 15,000 at Gillette Stadium, yeah.
I mean, there's...
There's an audience.
There's over 100,000 high school girls that play lacrosse. I mean, there's... It's a growing sport, and...
Participation's lapping boys' participation too. So you have a big potential audience for that. And I mean, like, what a disservice that is having a Maryland against BC or Stony Brook getting sent to streaming only. That's doing the game a disservice.
I mean, I'm trying to think of the sports. Like, what sport does better than if the women get like. I don't know. I know the championship game was like 15,000. I don't know what the semifinal attendance was in Foxborough last year. I can look it up. The women was 12,000 for the championship. I don't know what the
and Stony Brook Stadium capacity is coincidentally 12,000.
So. Yeah, I mean it's gonna sell out.
Yeah, that's gonna sell
out. It's gonna sell out. Yeah,
it's good,
especially if Stony Brook makes it.
Yeah, so if you have 12,000, I mean, what championships do you have that are getting better attendance than that? Basketball, softball, I suppose. I don't know what
baseball.
They play. Softball. I'm talking just women.
Uh-huh.
softball, I guess, I don't know the attendance in Oklahoma. I don't know like the seating capacity in Oklahoma City.
I don't know.
Because women's college reserves
women's, in yeah, women's Frozen Four generally does well because they usually keep it in Minnesota and Wisconsin, so it's not that far of a drive for the powerhouses. So generally, that does well, too. But even still, you know, women's lacrosse gets a pretty healthy crowd for the national title game. But hey, let's put the NCAA beach volleyball final on ESPN.
The Oklahoma City is 7,300 for college softball. So if that sells out, I mean, if, you know, the women's finals get 12,000, the only one that's beating it is, like, basketball.
Yeah.
So your second best sport in terms of attendance is on, you know.
It's on a streaming network.
On a streaming network for the semifinals, that's, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what women's soccer Final Four does either, but.
I don't think it's beside the point, but.
Yeah, I think that's a different animal because they usually put it in Cary, North Carolina, in a college stadium itself, I think.
Yeah, but no, look, it's, yeah, I mean, again, I'm not, lacrosse fans, I think, in general, kind of their complaints about networks are outdated, but the women, when you consider that there's no uniform streaming set up for the championship, at like the tournament as a whole, and then there's the semifinals shuffled off on ESPN3 it's pretty ridiculous.
All right, but on a happier note, we do have the quarterfinals this week, and they should be really fun to watch. And we'll start off at noon. It is Navy versus Maryland, both Final Four teams from last year. Maryland, the defending national champs, Navy semifinalists. You know, on paper, Maryland shouldn't have much of an issue with this one, but Navy's been feisty the past 2 years and can put a little bit of a tailspin on those plans. So might not necessarily be the Terp coronation that we expect.
Yeah, Maryland better not count their eggs too early on this one because Navy's on fire right now. They beat Loyola in the Patriot League final, and they beat Loyola in the second round of the tournament. And Loyola's no slouch this year. Loyola, they beat Florida. Loyola was top eight program all year long. And there's something about this Navy team with the two Collins sisters, Julia and Jenna, and Kelly Larkin as a sophomore. They're built to play in May for whatever reason. No one expected them to make the Final Four last year, but then they did. And then this year, people were talking about them as maybe even a bubble team this year. And then they stormed their way through the Patriot Tournament, and here they are in the quarterfinals again. So it's not a team I would count out. And I know yesterday when we were talking about it, I said I might pick Navy over Maryland. I free thought that, and I don't think that'll happen. I think Maryland emerges, but I think it'll be a tight game. One or two goals. I just think Maryland's defense is too good, especially the way they play against Denver. And I think they'll come away with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so hard to bet against. The things I said yesterday on the pod about not betting against Tillman in the quarterfinals is increased tenfold. Betting against Kathy Reese. I mean, they're just... I mean, some teams put, you know, Northwestern, Hopkins, and Penn State put a, you know, bit of an, you know, offense has kind of put some, you know, scare into them a bit. Though the Hopkins game was a bit of I watched some of that. That was a bit of, you know, some garbage time inflating by Hop. But yeah, but like otherwise, you know, they were on a roll there for a while against, you know.
They haven't lost at College Park in 6 years. I mean, Stony Brook almost got him last year, but
that was really as close as it's gotten.
That's the closest it's gotten in 6 years.
You look at the defense, and it's, I mean, you know, early in the year, you know, when they played, you know, like UMBC put 12 on them, and Hofstra put 10, and but then 5 to Hopkins in March, 7 to Penn, again, James Madison 12, but I mean, 12 against James Madison, considering some of the offensive outputs they have, is really. I mean, 12 is James Madison's worst offensive output the entire season.
Yeah, early in the year, I was kind of discounting Maryland a little bit because
yeah, like early in the year they were a bit.
You know, you allow 12 to UMBC. Like, what yeah. what's going on? UMBC sucks, but now you know it's this kind of program. It always gels together in uh-huh. May, and defense is definitely playing a lot better now than it was back then.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, it's found its stride.
Yeah, and plus with Maryland, you know, like a month ago. You know, during the Princeton game, I know it's a rivalry game on the women's end, but the 11-10 victory, you're kind of feeling a little wary on the turf because at that point, Princeton wasn't doing that hot then. They got hot after that game the rest of April. But then, you know, that once they returned to Big Ten play, they turned it back on, and, you know, now they're humming. Yeah.
And Big Ten was a bit down this year, but I mean, they still smashed everybody.
I mean, the closest game was Northwestern this year, but I think they'll get past Navy. I think it is a down year for Maryland, but a down year for them is even still a one seed in the tournament.
Hmm. Yeah, Navy is an explosive offense that can hurt you, and their defense is quite good as well. It just feels like it feels like one of those scenarios that we kind of see this play out. Oh, you get two teams that are similar, but one's just like a slightly better version of the other. And it feels like maybe that's the case here, where Navy's obviously a great team, but maybe Maryland's just a slightly better version of Navy.
Yeah, I think
the draw will be interesting in this one. It's I don't know who Maryland has taken Jaws now. It was heartstorm for most of the year and last year. But I know when Navy made their run last year, it was the Collins sisters, and they just kept flipping them on the draw. It was one or the other going through, and they just when they beat UNC in the quarterfinals last year, I think they won pretty handily on the faceoffs. So draw if they can get some kind of advantage for over Maryland,
the leader was Lizzie Colson.
Okay,
who's a defender?
Yeah,
or midfielder defender. You know.
Yeah. That's one gripe I have about women's lacrosse is they don't keep the stats for who's taking the draws. It's just measured by draw controls, so it's kind of idiotic. So you don't have face-off percentages for any of the individual players. I wish they added that, so you could really know who's taking them and who's doing what.
The like NCAA in women's sports, everybody.
Exactly.
I mean, just looking through the box score, it was you only see who wins it, so unless the person won the draw, you don't like actually know who took it on the other side. But yeah, it looked like it was Lizzie Colson against Denver.
All right.
Yeah, so that should be an interesting one because they're both well-balanced teams. They got the offensive firepower, but they also have the defense, so that could be an entertaining one to watch. Then we have Stony Brook BC, where the team that should be higher than 5 heads to the team that should be higher than 4. So it's a Memorial Day weekend game in the quarterfinals.
And it's the same deal as last year. I mean, Stony Brook is meeting a team in the quarterfinal better than they probably should be playing in the quarterfinal. But if they want to win that national championship, they've got to beat all the top teams anyway. And that's kind of been the match fully in the last few days. So he's not too concerned about it. They played BC in fall ball, and they won 18-5 for what that's worth. Not a lot. But it's an interesting game. I mean,
it's the two best stories in women's lacrosse going on right now. This surge of Boston College on one end, a program that was, decent in the ACC, but then really started turning it on after that run last year with their home field advantage at Gillette Stadium in the Final Four, too, yep. With that run. And then you have Stony Brook, which Coach Spillane has been building up for, a good 5 or 6 years now as a national power, and now they're at that stage where they're a national title contender. And as we said earlier in the show, kind of mirroring the Albany men, where it's something that was building and building and playing an exciting brand of lacrosse, and now at the point where they're a threat to win the title, but they just got to get past that quarterfinal wall. Now, Stony Brook the past couple of years has had some really great teams, but, 2015, yes, it was the second round, but, They hit that wall against Princeton. Last year, not really a discredit to them because they're going up against the number one. We're going up against the national power in Maryland, but just came up short in the quarterfinals. So kind of like Albany against Denver this weekend on the men's side. It's Stony Brook against BC on the women's side of that stigma of that quarterfinal wall and this being a really good opportunity to run it down, albeit with a tougher opponent, I think, for the Seawolves compared to the Danes on the men's side.
I think Stony Brook is the favorite this weekend, even on the road, but it's not by much. And that'll be the most exciting game of the weekend. The thing with Stony Brook, not only are they undefeated, they haven't won a game by fewer than 4 goals all year. They haven't played a close game all year long. That might end up hurting them if they have a little bit of adversity and have to play a tight game down the stretch. But
yeah,
I mean they've rolled over everyone. They just beat Penn by 13. I don't know. I can't see them losing even on the road. I know BC is good, and I know I'm biased too, but Callie O'Miller's one of the best players of all time. It would be nice to see her have that Final Four in her home stadium. It would be kind of unbelievable.
And the atmosphere of Stony Brook makes it. It's going to be insane at LaBelle.
It's like the Albany thing. It's, I mean, and even more increased. You're never, I mean, there is pressure because you're never getting Kylie O'Miller again. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what you do.
Well, if I may say that, Taryn has more points through her sophomore year.
You still have an O'Miller, but
they still have him. Still,
yeah. No, I mean, look, they have built, like, it's, again, it's like with the Albany man. It's like Albany will be back. You know, like if Albany loses this Saturday, they'll be back, and I'm sure Stony Brook will be back again, even if they lose this weekend. But it's, yeah, are you ever getting two people who score 80 goals in a season? You know, two talents like that, Nomo and Murphy, again. You know, it's hard to see that kind of opportunity presenting itself. Again, and BC is a tremendous team. Obviously, they're 20-1. I just think on offense, I think Stony Brook looks more balanced. I think, you know, they've, like, the starting attack, I think Murphy's kind of more the finisher of the trio, but she has 3 assists herself, and then they got Allie Kennedy and Samantha DeSalvo, the midfield, also have 20 assists. It just feels a bit more of a balanced offense, while BC feels a bit more, kind of has to beat you one-on-one. And, I mean, not that obviously they've done it all year, not that, you know, I don't know, you play more individual ISO kind of offense. It's not, you know, doesn't mean it can hurt you, but it feels like when you get to, you know, the tournament, and, you know, when you play tougher competition and everything's kind of so tight and amplified, feels like having the balance and the, you know, ability to kind of do it in multiple ways really balance kind of gives you an advantage, and that's what Stony Brook does so well.
Now, the thing with Stony Brook, they don't have a top 100 high school recruits on their roster. Not one. And it's kind of a system program. So where you have Maryland and Whittle having these unassisted goals, and you have Apuso, most of her goals are unassisted. Stony Brook, it's all a pass. Yeah. And it's, you do that, yeah. And it's, they have unbelievable assist numbers all the way down the lineup. I mean, Murphy is
with more than 20.
Finisher, mm-hmm. And even she has 30.
Yeah.
It's a team that's, you know, on paper you think, oh, it's all Miller and Murphy. It's way more than that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's 40-20.
She's unbelievable, and she plays defense too. She's midfield, and she's one of the fastest players I've ever seen. You'll hear her name a lot the next 2 years after Kylie and Murph graduate. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I'm
looking forward to this weekend. I'm so excited to see this game, and it's kind of the balance of the season, the balance of the whole legacy of Kylie and Murphy. all comes down to this game. Mm-hmm. So no pressure, but
yeah, there's pressure. Yeah,
go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, and I mean, the good news is too with Stony Brook is A, Coach Spillane has just made a killing off of Long Island recruiting the past, you know, 5 or 6 years of getting so many local kids to hop on board the program and really make a difference. So they'll be good in the future, and they got a lot of, you know, underclassmen that are contributing and everything, but it's just that, you know, kind of like with the Thompsons at Albany their final year, where it's just that, you know, the pressure of that legacy, mm-hmm. of that era of exciting lacrosse. Yes, it'll definitely help Stony Brook down the line in terms of recruiting, and they're here to stay, kind of like Albany, but it's just that moment of magic, to put into a better term, I guess.
You're never, mm-hmm. You're just not getting that.
Uh-huh. Plus, I think this is the last year Lavelle's having the Final Four in the next couple of years as well, if I'm not mistaken.
And I don't think they'll give it back to Lavelle. You know, you're not going to give it to a program that's number one. When they won the bid to host it, they were still a number 15, number 10 team.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at this.
They're not going to put the Final Four in College Park, for instance, because you're not going to give a team that kind of home field advantage. Mm-hmm. Stormbrook kind of lucked out this year, so take advantage of it.
Just look at and then the other key I look at is goalie. Stormbrook has the advantage statistically in goal.
Sorreros
at 49%, and Boston College is at 44 with.
Lauren Daly.
She's at 44. Maybe that. I mean, 49 to 44 is not a huge gap, but I mean, if it's one or two more saves in a game like this, that probably could make a difference. And so, I mean, yeah, these are two great teams, but the things you kind of look at, you know, at least I like to look at goalie play, and then, you know, assists, and you know, is your offense, you know, more versatile and able to do it in more than, you know, just winning individual matchups. That those things point to Stony Brook.
And on the draw, the two teams are awash, too. That's the third thing I look at a lot. Stony Brook is 59% this year, and Boston College is 60%. So
there are two other games on the docket, and one of them is Florida at James Madison. That'll be on at 1 o'clock as well. So here we go again. With James Madison, a program that's had success back in the 90s and early 2000s, this is kind of their comeback bid. Standing in their way is a Florida team that is always in contention. As we said, even though they're a relatively young program, they've made quite a few quarterfinals, and they've made some Final Fours as well. So the Gators and the Dukes for a spot in Stony Brook next week.
Yeah, I would take Florida in this one. I like the Pareka sisters, two Long Island girls. I know Lindsey Ronback has been wicked on the attack for them, too. And, you know, it's kind of a deal where Florida and James Madison are so close statistically to each other. Like, it's really a toss-up. And I know James Madison has the home field advantage in this game. But you just kind of feel like the more experienced program tends to prevail. Like we saw Stormwick versus Maryland last year, you know, two teams were very even, but Maryland came away with it. I think James Madison might be like, I still feel like they're a year away from breaking through and getting back to a Final Four.
I mean, this is a senior heavy JMU team. Like five of their top six point scorers are all seniors. You know, they're young in other spots, but like Florida is the younger team. And Shayna Preck is a senior, and they've got some seniors as well. But for the most part, Ron Beck, Preck, Shannon Kavanaugh, Grace Hawes, Kavanaugh and Hawes are both freshmen, and they've both had great years. So, again, I mean, you kind of go back to the pressure thing. Of a JMU seniors, you know, who have done so much to build up the program, you know, and you want to cap it off with a Final Four versus, you know, a Florida team that's kind of young and doesn't quite, and on the road, you know, and I mean, on the road's tough, but it also is a bit, you know, kind of, you know, we've seen it in just really all sports, it kind of can free you up, and so.
This Florida, is a game.
I like their defense, and that's, something that, you know, Jan, you scores, you know, obviously a bunch of goals. But, you know, against, in some cases, not great competition. So that'll be something to watch, you know. Kind of, that probably is the battle of the game.
And lastly, sorry, one more point on this one, Skylar.
Just a little bit. I mean, I don't think either Florida or JMU really has what it takes to beat North Carolina, who I'm going to pick in the next game. But this game, Florida James Madison, I expect a close game. So not that we'll be able to watch it because it's during all these other games, but
on JMUDukes.com. And then lastly, we have a titan of a matchup in the quarterfinals. Northwestern looks to get back to their old home Final Four, but standing in their way is a team that makes the Final Four almost every year themselves, UNC, after a one-year absence. Am I right on that?
It was Maryland, Penn State, and Navy, BC.
So, two teams looking to make their two teams that make Memorial Day weekend their home, but have a bit of a, albeit brief, absence from it. Will the comeback of Northwestern continue, or will UNC get back to where they belong on Memorial Day weekend? They square off 1 o'clock in a Big Ten ACC battle for all of those who love the ACC versus Big Ten.
I guess I'll start. Shelby Fredericks for Northwestern is one of the best draw specialists in the country. She'll be going up against Marie McCool, and that's where I think this game starts. And it's going to be Fredericks versus McCool. They're both experienced midfielders for their respective teams. That'll be big because both Northwestern and North Carolina have explosive offenses. UNC has Hazar and... I'm not looking at the roster right now, but McCool and Jamie Ortega and Katie Hogue. Those four are, they're as good as it's going to get on attack. Like they're just so deep on offense. They have, and you saw it in the game against Maryland early this year, where when they needed a goal, Jamie Ortega, the freshman, really stepped up. She's from Long Island too. And she's the all-time leading goal scorer in Long Island High School, and she's only a freshman. This UNC squad, I think it's just a little bit too deep for Northwestern. And I know they've got Lasota and they've got Neslebush, and those two players are on fire right now. In the first weekend, they combined for 31 goals over two games, which is preposterous. But at the end of the day, with a trip to the Final Four on the line, I'm going to go with Jenny Levy, and I'm going to go with UNC.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look past UNC. I mean, Northwestern's had, you know, obviously a good run that, you know, they should be very proud of going on the road and, you know, beating a seeded Towson team to get to this spot. But UNC is on a roll. Like after they, you know, they lost the game at one point in their
had that bad loss to Florida.
Yeah, and then they lost by six to BC. They had two close games with Virginia Tech and Notre Dame, one goal each. But since then, 10 over Louisville, 9 over Cuse, 19 over Canisius, 10 over Duke, 9 over Cuse again, 6 over VT, 3 over BC on the road, 9 over VT. I mean, you know, they're really just playing just so well. When you're playing that well and you have the talent they do and the coach, it's really hard to look past them.
All right, so we'll do some quick pick 'em. I'm going to go Maryland, Stony Brook.
One more point on that UNC. Both teams have freshman goalies, but Taylor Moreno for UNC saved at 55%, and Julie Krupnik for Northwestern saved at 44%.
Taylor Moreno? Ella Moreno is, I think she's the best goalie in the country, and she's only
a freshman.
And
that's scary for everybody.
She absolutely robbed that game against BC in the ACC tournament when they won by 3. You look at the numbers in that particular game. She saved like it was preposterous. Anyway,
yeah, I had 11 saves.
Might not parse out in the numbers, but in the second half, I think she saved like 80%. But
yeah, so that's the thing when you're an underdog and then you have to go against a great goalie. You know, that's makes it even tougher.
All right, yeah. So in terms of pick'em, we won't do the full tournament. Hey, if you want to do full tournament from here, we can as well. I mean, we'll be back next week to preview the Final Four. But for this week's games, I'm going to go Maryland, Stony Brook. Sorry, Lauren Costello, if you're listening. I'm going to go Florida, and I'm going to go UNC. So two road teams and two home teams, I think, are going to come away with victories in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I've got the same four as you.
Same here. No originality here.
Yeah, great minds think alike, though. So do we diverge at all in the final four picks?
Probably.
I'm a Maryland fan, so, and I never bet against Kathy Reese, but it's, I mean, Cavendish placed on. Brook at Laval is, and the game was so close last year, and Maryland's probably a little worse, and Stony Brook's probably just as good, a little better. You know, I will go and say the winner of that one wins the title, but I mean, it'd be really hard to pick against Stony Brook at Laval.
Yeah, I don't want to make picks in the Final Four, but I agree with Jake that the winner of Stony Brook Maryland. If that were to be the matchup, or the winner of BC Maryland, if that were to be the matchup, you know, that's probably the de facto title game. Uh-huh. Like, UNC is good, but I think all three of these teams on the left side of the draw are better.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I could see UNC stealing it if it's a very taxing semifinal between Maryland and BC or Stony Brook. But I think just those three teams should have been, you know, three of the top four. I would argue that BC is the better team in the ACC, even though UNC won the ACC tournament. So give me whoever. I think, yeah, it's a little too soon. I want to see who wins that BC Stony Brook game before making a final decision. But I think that's hard to argue against.
Yeah. All right. So while you're having fun at. You're going to Hofstra this weekend, right?
Yes. Apparently the weather is not looking that good right now, which I am not too pleased about. I don't know. The forecast has been changing all the time.
BC, but I'll be up in BC for that game against Stony Brook.
So Ryan's going to Hofstra. Skyler's going to Stony Brook. And I'm moving
up.
BC. Or BC.
You're going to Chestnut Hill, not Boston.
Or, yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, and I'm moving out of my dorm.
My God, it's supposed to rain every day until next
Seriously,
Monday on Long
insane.
Island. What? And guess what? The high here,
it's raining until Saturday.
You know
maybe
what I mean?
Clear
though?
Up for Annapolis.
It should be clear for the Final Four, and
hopefully.
That's when
I hope
it's raining all this week. Maybe it'll stop by next week.
It looks like for the women's Final Four, PM showers on the 25th, and then PM showers on Memorial Day for Foxborough.
But yeah, I mean, come on, Ryan.
That's 11 days in advance. But yeah.
Right now, rain 59 on Saturday. Hopefully that changes.
59. Ooh.
Gonna be sweater weather in the stands all throughout the women's sites and Hofstra on Saturday. Womp womp. But thank you, Skyler, for joining us on board. Glad to talk some women's lax with you. And we're going to do this. Yeah, and we're going to do this again next week as well to get you set for the women's Final Four. We'll have a little separate special in addition to the men's usual men's crosscast. Give us some feedback on the women's side as well. Trying a little something new with this as well because we do enjoy the women's tournament and wanted to give it a bit more of a deep dive, especially with Skylar being on our women's beat. And. You know, as fans of the women's game, we wanted to try something new. So tell us what you like, what you didn't like. yeah, we understand it's three dudes talking about a women's sport, but alas, Skylar is our women's writer. But other than that, you know, just let us know, and we'll take that feedback into consideration for next week as well. You can follow us as usual, collegecross.com, for all your news, analysis, and everything from the from all the NCAA tournaments in lacrosse as well as the MCLA. I'm Ryan McDonald. You can follow me at RyanMcD29.
I'll go. I'm at HBS underscore Jenkins R.
At Skylar J. Gilbert.
And of course, at college underscore cross, the main hub on Twitter. We're also on Instagram, college underscore cross. Also on Facebook, College Cross. And you can subscribe to College Crosscast, Podomatic, iTunes, and Google Play. Next week, we'll get you set for Memorial Day weekend on both the men's and women's fronts. Might have another special or two on the pipeline as well. So we look forward to the biggest weekend of the year. And we look forward to this weekend, quarterfinal weekend as well. So thanks, as usual, for listening, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
Stay hydrated.
And Jake going there, stealing my thunder again. But yes, stay hydrated. Even though it's going to be 59 and rainy.